Word of mouth.
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 From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. Remember the golden age of journalism? With each report of foreign bureaus closing, newsroom layoffs, and papers folding, media watchers evoke it. Opinions vary on whether quality news ended with the internet news aggregators or Craigslist or shoddy reporting in the run-up to the war in Iraq. Press watchers generally agree, however, that the golden age began with Edward R. Murrow and his team on CBS News.
The actions of the junior senator from Wisconsin have caused alarm and dismay amongst our allies abroad and given considerable comfort to our enemies. And whose fault is that? Not really his. He didn't create this situation of fear. He merely exploited it, and rather successfully. Cassius was right. The fault, dear Brutus, is not in our stars, but in ourselves. Good night and good luck.
Murrow speaking there in a 1954 television special on Senator Joseph McCarthy and the Red Scare. Todd Gitlin was at the forefront of the New Left movement in the 1960s and 70s. He's written several books on the history of mass media, including a new one on coverage of the Occupy movement. TomDispatch.com recently published Gitlin's indictment of the golden age of journalism, which he says is a myth. In it, Gitlin considers the role mainstream media has played in its own demise. And Todd Gitlin, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thanks very much.
Was there ever a golden age of journalism in the U.S.? I mean, do you agree that Edward R. Murrow and his boys, even though there was a woman among them, served that role?
Well, there were good moments. There were Murrow's moment was a fine one, although he came late in the game. McCarthy had been conducting his rampages through American life for 4 years by the time of that broadcast. And but certainly with respect to the civil rights movement, the mainstream media were indispensable. They spread the word that there were objections, that there were forceful objections to the reign of white supremacy. And there were also moments during the Vietnam War when there was independence on the part of some journalists. Some journalists dislodged the sort of smiley face impression that the war was just dandy, the Vietnam War. And then, of course, Watergate is this the crowning moment. And so as soon as Watergate was exposed by Woodward and Bernstein, who were not, by the way, normal political reporters. They were outsiders. They were a Metro reporter and a sort of general assignment crime reporter. Somehow they became the sort of the collecting point, the focus for the wish that there be an institution like the media, which is watching out for the public, is doing the public good, is not beholden to the powers, whether political or economic. And so, yes, there was truth to that, but it was much exaggerated. And I think corresponded to a kind of wish that there be some institution looking out for the public good at a time when the public good is very hard to find in play.
So what was not being reported on?
Well, it was not so much what was not being reported on, but let's just take some examples of what was not being reported on. Two of the decisive political interventions during this period took place outside the purview of the mainstream media. I'm referring to the overthrow of the democratically elected government in Iran in 1953 and the overthrow of the democratically elected government of Guatemala in 1954. Just recently, we have noticed that the former president of Guatemala came a cropper. He was convicted of genocide in his own country, and it's great that that happened. It's a victory for human rights. But it should be noticed that these hundreds of thousands of deaths, murders, took place during a time when American media couldn't really be bothered with Guatemala, and that the roots of that depredation were planted in 1954 when American media didn't care. So in general, the go-to position, the default position of American media has been, and even during this period, was to trust the government, to trust that if they said that it was rational to invade another country, it was because there were dangerous communists there and so on. That was the norm.
Well, you're alluding to some of the reasons why things weren't being reported on. I mean, we do know that it wasn't always a question of access. It was a question of listening to the government. We know that, you know, reporters knew about JFK's various affairs, but never reported on them for some kind of gentleman's agreement. What else was at play here?
Well, what else was at play, I think, was the fact that when it came to local matters, the publishers were part of a governing elite. They were in cahoots with other members of that elite. So that meant the owners of department stores, real estate interests, other forces who benefited from the maintenance of the status quo. When it came to national news, there was the fact that most of the decisive decisions that were being made not out in the open in Congress, but in government bureaucracies, executive branches of the executive, where in order to find out what was going on, you would have to have done a lot of homework. You would have had to get access to position papers and documents, most of them public, by the way. It's not that they were necessarily classified. It's that they weren't just lying out there as low-hanging fruit. They had to be found. And there were very few reporters who were putting in the work. As I alluded to a moment ago, the national reporters aspired to be in the White House, where they were asking set-up questions in a faddish way, just the way they are today. This week, the go-to scandal is Benghazi, and it's forgotten at such times that we have a Department of Urban Affairs, we have a Department of Health, we have a Department of Education, and so on. There was all kinds of material that needs to be unearthed if we're to have even a passing shot at democratic self-government. And that work is hard to do.
We're talking with Columbia journalism professor Todd Gitlin about what he calls the myth of journalism's golden age. He wrote a fairly scathing indictment of traditional media that was featured at Tom Dispatched and picked up by the Utney Reader, among other places. Well, your most recent book, Occupy Nation, continues your criticism of the media for what you said was laziness and knee-jerk preconceptions at the time. I think your most scathing criticism is for the press missing the financial scandal of 2008-2009 building up at that place. Now, what do you think is responsible here? A lot of people talk about the role of the media changing. Now, too many people are looking out for the bottom line, writing for and producing for the least common denominator. I would kind of argue against that, but I'd like to hear what you have to say.
Well, I was interested to hear your earlier discussion of the hedometer. If that's how you pronounce it. I think that what a lot of people, including people in the newsroom, want from the business section of the paper is a smiley face. They want to be assured that the money they have at stake, either directly or indirectly through pension funds, through stock ownership, and so on, that there are rational people who, of course, are being well paid for their efforts, but are delivering services. They're delivering goods. That we have an economy that makes sense. And I think that this wishfulness, again, is a very large portion of the mission of financial journalism. So that, of course, the most egregious performers are the television boosters on CNBC and the equivalent other financial networks. They believe that they didn't really do anything wrong in the run-up to the international financial breakdown. And they throw up their hands in the face of very complex financial instruments like collateralized debt obligations and the rest, which they think are somehow beyond their grasp and might as well remain so. There's something of a sort of happy talk premise that if we could just sort of go on talking happy, we can sort of talk ourselves into prosperity. I know this sounds harsh and sweeping, but the work was done by one of my colleagues here. Sorry?
I think that there are a lot of people who talk about listening to the news and they feel fairly cynical about the news that is presented, or wonder if they're getting the true story and wondering if they are getting this sort of happy spin. But that's, there's also a sort of a balance. And oftentimes people will say, you know, why aren't you reporting more on education? Why aren't you reporting more on this? There are a lot of places where people can find information and have access to information. Is it that good journalism isn't being done, Todd Gitlin, or that it's just not plentiful? It's not in the same places that it used to be.
Well, a study was done by Dean Starkman of the Columbia Journalism Review about the financial news. He looked at about a million articles that appeared in the major news organs during 2000 to 2007. There were 930 that addressed the possibility that there was a housing bubble going on. The propensity to accept official renditions of the world, I think, also operates in one of your examples, education. I think it's been taken for granted over the last 30 years that ever since the Nation at Risk report that came out during the Reagan years, that the problem in American education is lazy or otherwise dysfunctional teachers and the need to therefore to grade schools and to testify education, that is to say, turn it into testing. And that's only one view of what's wrong with education. There's a great deal of – there's a big line of argument to the effect that that's not the problem at all, that the problem is class and starvation of resources. But even though there are significant number of reporters assigned to education, what we're getting is – what we've been getting is a line of argument that suits the prevailing political cultural mood, and I don't think Americans have been well served by it, as we see by the fact that the test results don't actually change.
Well, unfortunately, Todd Gitlin, we have to leave it there, but I want to thank you for your time.
You're very welcome.
Todd Gitlin teaches journalism and communications at Columbia University, and he has a new book out called Occupy Nation. We spoke about his article, The Myth of Journalism's Golden Age. It was recently featured in the Utney Reader, among several other places online.